I'm here with Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, let's talk about the Normandy 4 meeting in Paris. I'm going to read you an excerpt from Anadolu News Agency, and the title goes like this: Alexander, Normandy 4 declares progress in Ukrainian settlement. First summit in 3 years ends with defining further steps to cope with crisis. The leaders of the Normandy 4 countries, Germany, France, Russia, and Ukraine, declared progress Monday following a meeting in Paris. Angela Merkel, Emmanuel Macron, Vladimir Putin, and Volodymyr Zelensky agreed to renew and expand the mandate. And observers from the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE, working in Eastern Europe, they unanimously approved a 24-hour mandate for OSCE observers to monitor the ceasefire in Eastern Ukraine with unlimited access to all areas instead of the 12 hours the current mandate allows. In addition, the four leaders spoke in favor of implementing an updated demining plan aimed at avoiding civilian casualties. The parties to the conflict have also agreed to a full exchange of prisoners of war before the end of December. Until then, the Red Cross must have free access to the captives. They also agreed to withdraw troops from 3 disengagement points by March 2020, in addition to the 3 locations where this already took place in 2019. The settlement of Stanitsa Luganskaya was mentioned as one of these points. Other such settlements will be defined within the framework of the contact group working in Minsk. The 3 leaders charged the foreign ministers of Germany, France, Russia, and Ukraine with discussing the conditions that will allow the holding of local elections in eastern Ukraine territory. Merkel, Macron, Putin, and Zelensky also agreed to gather in 4 months for another summit to check on the work done and design measures necessary to further promote conflict settlement. Commenting on the results of the meeting, Merkel said she had the impression that all the participants had goodwill and a firm intention to achieve progress in settling the conflict. Alexander.
Well, the first thing to say is actually there were 2 meetings happening in Paris. One was this meeting with Zelensky, Putin, Macron, and Merkel, and the other one was a bilateral meeting that happened on the side between Putin and Zelensky. And this is something which is very important, but and which hasn't been widely commented upon, but was perhaps in some respects, one feels, the more important meeting. But let's first of all look at the Normandy 4 meeting, which is about trying to settle the actual overriding conflict in Ukraine. Now, what we got were a lot of agreements on technical issues. Now, this is not to be underestimated. This is the first meeting of this group that's happened for 3 years. Poroshenko signed the Minsk agreement, but he refused to implement it. He basically became completely obstructive about everything, and he was pushing his military constantly into more and more confrontations with the people of the Donbass, and indeed with the Russians. So there was total deadlock. The very fact that we are now talking about demining and disengagement of troops and all of these things, that is an important thing. It should at least bring some degree of stability and security to this area. The other thing that was agreed, and this is, again, actually of very great significance, is that under Poroshenko, the Ukrainians have tried to put these territories under an effective blockade. They've virtually stopped movement of goods and people across the conflict line. Apparently that's going to end, and we're going to have 3 crossing points, and people for the first time are going to be able to travel from places like Donetsk to Kiev and Kiev to Donetsk and move around and do all those sort of things. Now, that is actually, again, it may not sound like a big thing. In the context of a conflict like this, it is a big thing. What could not happen, and I don't think anybody expected to happen, is that there would be a major change of the very entrenched positions that stand in the way of a long-term political settlement. Ukraine, Poroshenko, in February 2015, in the face of the almost total collapse of his military, was forced by Merkel and Putin to sign an agreement in Minsk where he was supposed to agree to grant autonomy to the Donbass republics and to allow free elections there and to announce an amnesty. And he didn't do that. And that has frozen the conflict and made movement completely intractable. Zelensky, facing immense pressure within Ukraine, hasn't been able to shift from that position. But Putin made it very clear that if he wants an overall settlement in Ukraine, that is what he is going to have to do. And Putin also said and reminded Zelensky, it is in the Minsk agreement, that that means direct talks between the Ukrainian government and the leaders of the republics of the Donbass. Poroshenko's approach to the leaders of the republics of the Donbass was not to talk with those people, but to send hired killers, assassins, to murder them. And several of them, in fact, were murdered. So that would be a radical shift of approach. So some progress then on the conflict in eastern Ukraine. The major work is still to be done. The driving force for this agreement, for this meeting, was Emmanuel Macron, who is very anxious to come to some kind of overall settlement with Russia. And of course, Zelensky needs it too, because he was elected as the peace candidate. Putin, playing his usual game, very magisterial, very calm. He makes it very clear that he's prepared to talk, to negotiate, but staying very consistent with the line that he has taken throughout, all the way back to February 2015, when the Minsk agreement was signed, which is that the Ukrainians must come into accord with it. So still a lot to do, some progress, very much a work in progress. We will see how Zelensky is able to cope with the inevitable backlash that's now going to be in Ukraine itself.
All right, excellent point, Alexander. Real quick, the technical issues solved, especially the movement of people, is huge because people want to see family. Yeah. People forget that families have been separated. Yeah. You know, people want to travel back and forth and maybe see their towns and villages. So this does, you know, unite the people once again.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to move freely, or at least freely to a point, and that's a good thing. Zelensky, obviously, we've been, you know, consumed with the entire Ukraine gate thing, the Trump Zelensky phone call, but Zelensky has much bigger problems that he's to address. And this is proof of that point, that Zelensky really does have challenges ahead of him. And we're pulling for him to fulfill his mandate and be the peace candidate that he positioned himself to be. Alexander, get into Zelensky, get into his meeting with Putin.
Yeah.
What needs to be done here so we can get to a solution?
Absolutely. And you're quite right, by the way, about the movement of the people. And when that happens, by the way, wars tend to end. You don't really go back to fighting when that sort of thing has happened. But the meeting with Putin, incredibly important, because this is the first opportunity for Putin and Zelensky to meet one-to-one. Poroshenko, by the way, always avoided meeting Putin one-to-one. Zelensky seems to have been happy to agree to it. And what we understand is that the two men got on. I mean, Putin liked Zelensky. The fact that he likes Zelensky doesn't mean that he's going to, you know, make radical concessions to Zelensky. But it does mean that, you know, he and Zelensky can start to work towards an understanding. But the key issue that they were talking about is gas. This is the major problem Ukraine has, because there is the ongoing transit agreement, which allows gas to travel from Russia to Europe across Ukraine, is about to expire. I think there's only 8 days left, and the Ukrainians are in a very, very tough position if they don't somehow agree to extend it. Now, the Russians have been making all sorts of offers to the Ukrainians to extend it. But the problem the Ukrainians have is that they've got themselves again on this hook that they need to, that they want the Russians to compensate them for some of the losses they said they've suffered as a result of Russian actions. And of course, they got this extraordinary decision, this very bizarre decision from a tribunal, an arbitration tribunal in Stockholm, which seems to support them in this. So these Ukrainians need to find some way to get themselves off this hook, because Ukraine is utterly dependent on transit from Russia. It also has been told by the Europeans that reverse flow from Europe is not going to continue for much longer. So they need to do a deal with Russia. The Russians have just about finished Turk Stream 2. They're just about finished Nord Stream 2. Gas is going to start flowing through those pipelines to Europe very soon. Europe is apparently well stocked up with gas this winter, so it can get by through a brief cutoff. Ukraine doesn't therefore have many cards. So this is what he's trying to negotiate with Putin. He's trying to get some kind of gas agreement. And what I understand is happening is that the Russians are pointing out to the Ukrainians, if you buy your gas from us, you buy your gas from us, you don't get it. This is the gas you are going to consume on your own internal Ukrainian market. It will be cheaper than what you're essentially stealing from us, through our pipelines, but being allowed to do at a very high price than the Europeans. And at the same time, you'll get a transit agreement, which will provide you with some money in your exchequer, in your treasury, and that will also enable you, once you've got the gas sorted out, to move forward further towards that political and economic rapprochement with Russia, which is the only way that Ukraine can get itself out of the hole, economic, political, and all the rest, which it has dug itself into. So a complex negotiation underway, a very tight deadline on the gas, but progress, and let's see whether it can be built on.
Two final questions, Alexander. We've detailed many times in many videos that Ukraine does have a big problem with some far-right militant neo-Nazi groups that do want all-out war with the East and eventually with Russia. And they are supported by a very powerful neocon lobby in the U.S. and in Europe, a very powerful neocon lobby that also wants this outcome. Zelensky, as the new president, is fighting those forces. And those are powerful forces, by the way. Does Russia understand that no matter how hard they squeeze Ukraine here, they do have to give Zelensky some sort of PR wins in a way so that, you know, these forces don't overpower him?
They know that very well.
Okay, so they know that. Even though, you know, you're saying that Putin is standing firm in his position, they do understand that Zelensky does seem like he does want to negotiate, he does want to talk him like Poroshenko. So do the Russians understand what's going on here, with that we can't push too hard and we have to give him some wins and we have to keep the door open for Zelensky to fulfill his mandate of trying to bring some peace, avoid the neocons, avoid the neo-Nazis, and mostly in the West and all of this stuff?
They know that very well, and they've already done this. I mean, they returned the ships to Ukraine that they captured as a result of the Kerch Straits incident a few months ago. The prisoner exchange with the Ukrainians, which is going to result in everybody, all the people on both sides being released, is going to be popular in Ukraine. And so that, again, helps Zelensky. And of course, the Russians are pointing out to Zelensky again that, you know, they're prepared to give him a good price for the gas. So, of course, they understand these things. And Putin said, you know, that, you know, we have the Minsk agreement. The Minsk agreement is very clear, but every agreement, however clear it is and however firmly we abide by it, it can be implemented in a flexible way. It was actually very interesting comments that Putin made during his press conference about, you know, flexibility. And that is very much the style that the Russians are following: consistent and firm on the main issues, flexible and willing to be compromising on the margins, on the marginal things. But the marginal things are not so marginal for Ukraine, and they do matter. Having said this, Zelensky is going to face challenges. There was a protest in Kiev on Maidan Square by the far right just before the day of this summit meeting. All the prominent people who are opposed to Zelensky, Poroshenko, Tyabnybok, the leader of the Svoboda Party, the far right Svoboda Party, and of course Yulia Tymoshenko, they were all out there. The one thing I would say is the turnout was pretty poor. It was only 8,000 people, apparently. So that just shows how exhausted with this whole business many Ukrainians are. Whether they remain like that, whether they remain passive in that way, we will wait and see. But I would have thought that even the most fanatical Ukrainians must be sensing that the tide is now starting to shift, that Europe is no longer backing them in the way that they thought it was back in 2014, that the United States is looking more wobbly. There's a very interesting article by John Laughlin, in which he points out that the Democrats making Ukraine a political issue in the United States almost inevitably means that the Republicans of the United States are going to be much more skeptical about Ukraine than they have been up to now. So Ukraine's position is getting, in that respect, weaker, or at least the Maidan movement's position is getting weaker. And though that's not going to make these hardliners in Ukraine and in Kiev change their views, it may demoralize them, and demoralized people are less likely to do extreme and violent and dangerous things, or at least one hopes so. So there may be some space, some maneuver space for Zelensky going forward.
Okay, the sincerity and motivation of Merkel and Macron, care to comment on that?
Well, but Merkel has no, the Russians have learned from long experience that they can't trust Merkel at all. I mean, she promised them many things in Ukraine, which never happened. I mean, she promised them in the spring of 2014 that there wouldn't be a Ukrainian offensive in the east, and there was. And she promised them in February 2015 that Germany would back the Minsk Accords, the implementation of the Minsk Accords. And it didn't. I mean, it just went along with the fact that the Ukrainians were obstructing them. So they don't trust Merkel. I don't think they trust Macron very much either. But they sense that Merkel's position in Germany is weakening. They've almost completed work on Nord Stream 2. As we discussed in a recent video, the German business community went off to Russia, it was Sochi, not Moscow, as I said, on another video. It was in Russia, and they met with Putin, and they pleaded with him there for progress to resolve the Ukrainian conflict, because Germany is suffering economically because of it. So all of these things are now in play. So, the Russians don't trust Macron, they don't trust Merkel, but they sense that their position with respect to Merkel and Macron is much stronger than it was 5 years ago or 4 years ago when the Ukrainian conflict began.
And Merkel and Macron very quickly just kind of want this headache to go away, correct?
I mean, well, Macron is...
Or they have different...
Well, they have different... Merkel is on her way out. I mean, I think that from her point of view, she's now really all about defending what's left of her legacy, which frankly is collapsing all around her. That's it, so it seems to me. But that's what she's about. But Macron is desperate to get some kind of rapprochement going to the Russians, because he's convinced himself that this is going to, establish him as the great statesman and leader of Europe, and the person who's going to build this strong Europe that's going to stand up to China and the United States. Europe plus Russia versus America and China. A fantastic vision, an absurd one, but Macron has much invested in it now. And from the Russian point of view, if that means that he's going to start pushing the Ukrainians towards making concessions, well, they're not going to be sorry.
All right. Alexander Mercuris, editor-in-chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell to make sure you get notifications when we publish a new video. Find us on iTunes and on SoundCloud to get an audio copy of this video as well. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps out our channel a whole lot. And check us out on BitChute and Duran Video. Duran Video is our own private video platform. We invite you to take a look at it. It's in beta mode. And of course, BitChute is the free speech video platform. We post everything we do on those platforms as well. And we post everything we do on Telegram, the Telegram app, iTunes, Play Store. Find the Duran channel there, subscribe, and you'll be kept up to date on everything we do, including discounts we have on our famous Duran shop with our famous magic mugs.
Magic mugs. You can see them here. This one I'm drinking from with the coat of arms of the city of Moscow, which is, of course, for so long, the big capital city of this part of the world that we're talking about. I mean, Kiev was the first capital of the Russian state. People always forget this. Moscow, of course, was the successor capital. And Alex has got the Alpha mug, the mug with the Alpha Force, the coat of arms of the Alpha Force. And I've spoken many times of how amazing these mugs are, how wonderfully they keep tea and coffee warm. So if you want a perfect mug for your tea or for your coffee or your hot chocolate or your beer or whatever it is, you cannot do better than these. And also we've got all these great other items. We got the amazing polo shirts like the one I'm wearing. We got short sleeve t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, v-neck shirts, all 100% cotton, all incredibly stylish, all extremely comfortable. We've also got hats and stickers and other great things. Alex has been refreshing the product line on our shop. It's now Christmas. It's the great time of year to buy amazing things. You can get them from our shop for yourself, for your family, and for your friends. DRN20, as Alex will remind us, is the discount. You can get 20% discounts on all these things. So Alex will tell you how to do it.
20% on everything. Just on the checkout, you'll find the box. Put in DRN20 and you'll get that discount. Alexander Mercuris, editor-in-chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.